Capital Sports Update. Up to the minute sports, where sports is taken seriously.
Your weekly dose of everything that is current affairs, news, and everything that you would basically want to know and hear in the world. Of course, today I'm joined by more or less the usual suspects. We start off with Irene Mwangi, who's making a comeback after last week. She gave way to the panel that we were with discussing whether the death penalty is a cake or not. And of course, we're joined by, again, Jeremiah Wakaya, our online editor, and also a person who has a liking to one of the topics that we will be discussing today, that is global affairs and foreign relations. And of course, in this week, we have taken advantage of a conversation that's going on in the country, which revolves around the issue of the wage bill, the public wage bill. And we are basically trying to understand that whole conversation and also looking at it from the perspective of the striking health workers, whether they are making the whole situation better or worse for themselves. But also something else that cropped up in last week was Djibouti bringing in a new conversation that is kind of developing into a sibling rivalry between Djibouti and Kenya whenever it comes to these seats that for regional bodies, be it the United Nations, the Africa Union, or you never know. One time we might even find ourselves going head-to-head when it comes to FIFA or something of that nature. But before we get to Djibouti and Kenya and their rivalry, let us start with the whole concept of the wage bill. Irene Wakaya, Irene, you cover parliament, so you kind of will help us with that conversation from that perspective. Wakaya, you have been in the newsroom where you've seen, say, from 2017, where this is like the genus of, for instance, the health workers' story, whereby the issue of wage bill does not come up whenever people go to the negotiation table. The Salaries and Remuneration Commission now comes and says we want to peg our wage bill at 35% by 2028. The question that everyone is asking is, now that you are having this third national wage bill conference, is it a talk shop, or is it 35%? Is it achievable?
If you follow the conversations in the ongoing wage bill conference that started today, they've sort of like reported progress in the sense that they are saying they have managed so far to bring down the wage bill to about 40%.
Mm-hmm. So 43%.
Mm. So they're on track to the 35% threshold that is recommended in law. Mm. So, of course, SRC is reporting progress, but there's a heavy pushback from unions, including the doctors. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How do you get the weight? The argument that someone would put across is, how come we are not feeling it? If you're saying, for instance, that the wage bill is now at 43%, but in 2023, it was maybe at 47. Mm-hmm. How come we are not feeling that the ease in pressure? That would be the obvious question.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, because the narrative really is that you spend the 35% of wage bill to revenue ratio. So you're spending 35% of the revenues you generate on the wage bill, mm-hmm. and spend more on development. So the question then is, why aren't we feeling it in terms of maybe probably development spending? Mm-hmm. In fact, observations have it that development spending has been declining over time. The other issue that comes up really is how much we are spending on loans. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole conversation. In fact, we've had people who have questioned the figures as far as our debt portfolio is concerned. Jimmy Wanjigi has come out openly and said, okay, we need to audit our debt because some things don't make sense. Mm-hmm. So, well, that's a very huge debate out there.
Yeah. You have wage bill. You have, it's actually among the things that SRC brings up all the time, mm-hmm. in the sense that you have the wage bill, you have low labor productivity, yes. which basically means you're having people in government who might be doing the same job, which then makes other people feel like there's no point of coming to work, or someone is just, how do you, you've seen Moses Kuria coming out and saying, I'm going to reform the civil service. Mm-hmm. How do you get rid of, because ideally it's not dead weight, but it is a stage managed dead weight, mm-hmm. in that you hired and then you've given people the same jobs.
Yeah, duplication of roles. And that means you have a public service that is not efficient. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges we've had in this country is that there's serious frustration, especially from citizens expecting service from government, mm-hmm. that public service is not as efficient as it should be. In fact, there have been conversations, maybe we should privatize some of functions that are handled by the public service so that we get the efficiency that comes with the private sector. So that's really a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. But the question really is, why do we keep finding ourselves in this hole? In the sense that SRC is here telling us that the wage bill is unsustainable, but government signed a CBA 5 years ago, mm-hmm. committing to pay, in essence, according to government now, what they don't have. Because government should actually have been able to foresee this. They should have been able to see this in their projections and realize we may not have the money to sustain, for instance, the 206,000 for interns, for medical interns.
Yeah.
That should have been foreseen when government was on the negotiating table in 2017. But of course, the government spokesperson now says government signed that deal under duress.
Under duress, for people who do not live in Kenya, you would know that 2017 was an election year.
Yes.
So was the duress the election, or was the duress the health workers?
Precisely. I mean, political expediency. Do we have a situation in this country where our leaders in public office would basically make commitments that don't even make sense, mm-hmm. for their personal gain? Is Moura saying that President Uhuru Kenyatta, who he supported then because he was part of the ruling alliance at the time, mm-hmm. Committed the government of Kenya to an unrealistic and unsustainable CBA?
Now we've seen Moses Kuria coming out, CS for public service, mm-hmm. coming out and saying that the public service, the ministry that he heads, is going to relook all CBAs. I still don't see how they're going to address the wage bill, because it seems like you're just going back on an old conversation, and ideally you may not have an answer. To use the analogy that you've almost thrown out, in the sense that we seem to be digging ourselves in a hole. Isn't it time we stopped?
Yes, and probably what Moses Kuria is suggesting is perhaps the public service ministry needs to be involved so that we have equity in the public service, because he seems to be coming from that. That's his perspective, mm-hmm. that we need to have equity in public service, in the sense that whatever the government is paying for a certain profession mm-hmm. must then be justified and be comparable in some form or way to what another profession is earning. Mm-hmm. Maura the other day gave an example of doctors. I don't think it's a fair comparison, but for instance he said interns in public service in different other professions would earn 25,000 as an entry level salary. Why would the government then be paying medical interns or intern doctors 206,000? Because the offer that's currently on the table is 70,000, mm-hmm. which MP, the doctors' union has flatly declined.
Okay, allow me to take a small break and then we'll be back. Irene, we'll be bringing you in because you, by default, you're representing another class of people who, when they say they want a pay hike or they want to review their allowances, they always get their way. And welcome back to Global Digest with myself, Laban Wanambisi, Irene Mwangi, and Jeremiah Wakaya. One of the conversations that we are having is in regards to basically the wage bill, the public wage bill, and the confusion that we are having in the country on how we should be bringing it down. SOC says in the last from last year to this year, it has come down to 43%, which is progress towards having it at 35% in 2028. Now, one of the people that usually feature so much whenever we have a conversation about the wage bill is usually members of parliament. Members of parliament, because sometimes we have seen, most of the times we have seen, when they say they want to review their allowances, they usually bulldoze their way through this whole conversation. Irene, throughout this period, we have not heard anything from the members of parliament. Why is that so?
I think when the 10th parliament got into office, if you can remember, there was a stalemate between SRC and the 13th parliament led by Speaker Moses Wetangula and his counterpart in the Senate, Amason Kingi, concerning the benefits, which include the allowances they used to receive in the House, as well as the issue of the car grant. And somewhat they got their way, although not 100%, but they still managed to, you know, I don't want to say coerce, mm-hmm. but you know, bulldoze their way by putting some threats to SRC, saying that they will disband the commission and also interfere with some of the allowances that they're getting as members of the commission, if you can remember at the time. Mm-hmm. But if you've seen the way the political class, from the president to the deputy to all the way to the MCAs, they will always have their way mm-hmm. when it comes to the issue of increasing their salaries and allowances. And it is really sad that this cadre of people will always have their way. And when we look into the issue of merit in terms of, the Kenyan system, mm-hmm. you're always cultured in a way that the more you are educated, the more pay you will receive. But in Kenya, it works vice versa. I remember the president was very vocal saying that MCAs should have their salaries increased, yet these are from four students. And when they were
not all of them, not all of them. Yes,
the requirement is the bare minimum you should have is for a form four student.
Okay,
but there was no situation whereby people will point out and say, okay, why will an MCA be paid 120,000? What is he doing, or what productivity is that particular post putting in place that the electorate might say, okay, yes, maybe the MCAs should have their salaries increased because they're doing this and this for us, mm-hmm. you know? But when you look into critical sectors like doctors, teachers, and what have you, when they come to agitate for better pay, it always seems like a nuisance, to the extent that the IG is saying that's a what did he call it yesterday? A political nuisance or a nuisance?
No, he said it's a public nuisance.
It's a public nuisance.
Yes.
And these are the people, health is a critical aspect in the day-to-day life of any person. But you can see the way the government is treating it is like it's a by the way. And it comes at a time when Parliament, mm-hmm. Through the Omnibus Bill, said the president can appoint more than 22 chief administrative secretary, mm-hmm. more than the cap initially was 22 when the bill was coming to the House,
yeah.
but for whatever reasons it was amended to allow the president to have the willy-nilly to appoint, you know, more than 22 for one chief administrative secretary. The salary plus the operations of that particular office is money enough to employ a handful of doctors, the doctors are agitating for. So you can see how the political class will somewhat treat other cadres that are critical in a way that it seems like if you're not in the political arena, then oh unto you. If the unions are not strong enough, and in this case, unions like, you know, KOTU, KMPDU has really stood out to agitate for the rights of the doctors. But some like KOTU, which are in the pockets of the government, onto those workers, should they decide to agitate for anything?
Actually, KOTU is a mother is the mother union. Yeah. Okay, you had something.
Yeah. I think, and maybe just to be fair to MCAs, mm. I think the conversation around wages should be, in this particular case, you expect MCAs to oversight county governments. Surely, you do not expect effective oversight from individuals that you're paying about 100,000. Mm-hmm. So maybe that conversation needs to be broader. But the frustration, the frustration from the public is that when it comes to lawmakers at the national level, for instance, they are actually able to twist SRC. So why would we have a constitutional commission that is mandated to evaluate jobs in the public sector and recommend benefits, mm-hmm. for different cadres in the health sector, only for a certain group, the political class, to, you know, arm twist the SRC and in essence determine what it is there to earn. Mm-hmm. I think that is where we really have an issue.
Mm-hmm. The reason why I roped in members of parliament into this conversation is because members of parliament are also the ones who primarily under the 2010 constitution are the ones who are supposed to more or less act as the global north in the budget making process. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who are supposed to actually tell Treasury, no, remove money from there, put it here. But in this case, both of you are telling me, no, they're in it for themselves first. They stash their pockets first and then they leave everyone with the leftovers.
Clearly, I mean, and you have to look at the best practice. In this case, if you're looking at health, there is the Abuja Declaration that sets a specific quota for, in terms of funding, the health function, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
We are far below that, and the National Assembly, for some reason, doesn't seem to prioritize funding towards health. and different other sectors have been a victim of the National Assembly and Parliament, essentially. Judiciary, for instance, has been crying for the longest time to get at least 1.5% of the national budget. They are far from that. I think they are currently at 0.9%. So how Parliament prioritizes issues in the budget making process, I think there is a disconnect. But again, I would say, you know, this is all politics. I would imagine the ruling coalition today has its priorities. If the ruling coalition put its foot on the ground and say it was going to whip its members to commit a certain threshold of the national budget towards certain key functions, that would be achievable.
Okay. One of the prime ideas or flagship projects for President William Ruto is universal health coverage.
Yes.
And yet he's basically not taking the doctors, clinical workers, seriously when they say we are past the 30-day mark.
Well, I think for him, he's stuck with the fact that, well, I mean, and these demands have been labeled unreasonable and sustainable by the government. Mm. And that's why, you know, that takes us to the basic question. So why would government commit itself to a CBA that is essentially outside the framework of SRC, for instance? Because SRC should have come in during CBA negotiations and advised the government that if you're going to commit anything at the time, if you're going to commit anything, then let it be within this particular range. Mm-hmm. So for you to have commitments that are, in government's own admission, outside the ways and means of Kenyans, the taxpayers, essentially, then how are we going to achieve? And you see, you also need industrial harmony. As all this conversation happens, we have stranded patients in hospitals. Mm-hmm. People are actually unable to access healthcare. So I think there's a serious disconnect in that.
So the question that someone would ask is, who exactly is usually in that room? And for instance, today when the medics held a press conference, they said the last time we were in the room, in a negotiation table, the people who were sent to negotiate with us were not the decision makers. Mm-hmm. They were other people. And when we tabled our demands, these people walked out of the room. And if I remember correctly, the last meeting was chaired by the deputy chief of staff, Josphat Nanok. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the ministry were concerned, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Labor, Treasury were concerned, I think maybe that's where the problem comes, where you are sending probably people who cannot make a decision on their feet.
Well, but in a negotiation, you would have, whether you appear in person or send representatives, the idea of a negotiation is parties will table their demands, then parties will retreat and go and consult their respective constituencies or bosses, in this case, and come back with a counter proposal.
Yeah.
So that is what then advances a negotiation. But when you have a situation where parties are completely unwilling or unserious to engage, then that's a crisis.
Okay, we're going to take another short break so that we can allow Angela to inform the nation on what's going on. It is 7 o'clock on Capital FM. And welcome back to Global Digest with myself, Laban Onambisi, Jeremiah Wakaya, and of course, Irene Mwangi. We are discussing the whole issue of the wage bill. Going back to the conference that is currently ongoing in at the Bomas of Kenya, one of the things that we had that came out of the meeting today was the head of public service basically declaring or telling civil servants that they may not get a salary hike or a review or of their allowances in an upward trajectory anytime soon, because government is trying to bring down the wage bill. At some point, you usually want to believe that is what is going to happen, but why does it always seem like it's the lower tier people who will suffer, and the people at the top might not feel that pinch that much?
I think that's SRC's predicament. For some reason, SRC has been unable to persuade the people in public service, mm-hmm. especially unions representing workers in public service, that it is fair in its in its recommendations, mm-hmm. In that. Public service workers would feel, you know, the political class has an upper hand. They can almost unilaterally review their salaries, yet every other person would then be told, you know, we have an SRC advisory that tells us you cannot have a pay rise. Mm-hmm. So I think SRC has to rise above that and somehow persuade workers in the public sector that it is actually fair in its dealings.
But it's when we talk about SRC, I remember when we were voting for the constitution and we were told we are going to have this commission that is going to kind of make it a level playing field for every public service worker and state officer. And then we now get to this point whereby it is almost like SRC are setting a standard, and then people basically decide whether they want to follow or not to follow. Yes, is SRC a toothless bulldog in that context?
Perhaps a victim of its own making, I would say, because the contest around SRC and what SRC is saying, mm-hmm. has always been against the background of what is happening with the political class, mm-hmm. particularly MPs in this case, and members of the executive. So like I said, SRC has been unable to persuade the public, and most importantly, workers in the public sector, mm-hmm. that it is actually fair. That it's not just setting the standard for, you know, the lower cadre, like you'd want to put it, mm. but this applies to, you know, members of the executive, top members of the executive. Mm. This applies to members of parliament, and it applies to everyone else.
Mm-hmm. So the Irene mentioned something here when she said the way it looks like people who do not do so much end up getting very much, and the people who actually carry the whole burden of the workload are the people who are paid very little. Now, in this context, you have, for instance, CSS, PSS, who you'd argue, for argument's sake, they're just policy makers, mm-hmm. but policy probably implementers. But you look at the Watu wa Mkono. Yeah, they're the ones who are constantly crying. They're the ones who on May 1st mm-hmm. will fill up the stadiums and everything else waiting for the president to declare the new minimum wage is at this level. Mm-hmm. I mean, SRC was supposed to actually give you hope, mm-hmm. that after I have done job evaluation, I have actually seen that Wakaya actually deserves to be paid X amount. And Laban, who's just a member of parliament, for instance, deserves to be paid this level. Is it that people don't care about the job evaluation that SRC has done? Because they usually do it. and they usually have that whole explanatory paper okay. that they even put it in the Kenya Gazette to show this is what we actually looked at and this is what is informing our conversation.
I think MPs simply don't, and now every other person mm-hmm. doesn't care anymore. Mm-hmm. So that now you have the doctors' union saying, we don't care about what SRC says, this is what we feel we deserve. Mm-hmm. So I think we are at a situation where SRC doesn't matter anymore.
But they're being paid salaries.
Yes, and it's a constitutional commission. Yeah. I mean, their advisories should be binding. So it's a sad situation that we actually have a commission as powerful as SRC, because it's actually created in the constitution. It's not a creation of an act of parliament. Mm-hmm. It's created in the constitution itself. Mm-hmm. So to have such a commission basically helpless is quite frustrating.
Let me say this before I close this topic, because now I feel Laban is inclined on that particular side. But that President William Ruto's administration, once they got into the office, they increased the wage bill by 16.55 billion. I think 3 months in after they did the appointments in that particular regime. And for them now to say that they want to reduce the wage bill by 35% in 2028, mm-hmm. I see they are really not being intentional in that particular quest. And even if we want to say, okay, SRC should be the body to look into to keep, you know, the checks and balances on this particular issue, there's really minimal that SRC can do, given that in some arms of government, say legislature, they really can't stamp their foot on that particular arm of government, because again there's some interdependence between these two, the independent institution and parliament, in terms of checking into the budgets that will be approved for this particular commission, and also some of the proposals that SRC will make. We also had the same issue with judiciary. I think it was an issue with the car mortgage, mm-hmm. and SRC had filed a case. And you expect this arm of government to rule against themselves when the car mortgage is set to benefit the judges in this particular case. So even as SRC is going to file a case in judiciary that will act against the judges again, they find themselves somewhat incapacitated in some aspects in terms of ensuring that they regulate the salaries and allowances of civil servants in different arms of government. But what I think should be the focus of this particular regime in their quest to reduce the wage bill by 35% is to check on revenue collection as well as corruption. Because in even the reports that have been tabled by the Controller budget, in the last 6 months, this regime, in terms of the ministry, departments and agencies, mm-hmm. they paid 5.7 billion shillings outside the payroll. These are not people who are employed permanent and pensionable. These are people who, as they are called, some casual workers. They're outside the payroll system. And you can imagine that amounted to 5.7 billion. That is in the last 6 months, in the report that was done by the controller budget. Mm-hmm. So with such scenarios, with those loopholes of wastage and corruption, even as the regime is working to, I don't see the solution in terms of saying we'll not increase the allowances or the salaries of public servants, because those allowances and increase of salaries should match with the productivity. Why will I work so hard or ensure that I maximize my productivity only for my employer to tell me, I will not increase your salary because this and this is happening, yet we are seeing wastage all over? It will downside the morale of the public service, which is a sector I think previous regimes, apart from the Moi regime, have tried to boost their morale so that we can get services from the public service entities. So until they work on that, I think this quest to reduce the wage bill by 35% will not work to the benefit of common mananchi, because some of these low cadre staff in the public service work directly to serve the common mananchi. So if at all they'll interfere with their morale, mm-hmm. then on to Kenyans.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing I like about figures is they kind of tell you the original story as opposed to percentages. Because when someone says it has dropped to 43%, but it doesn't give you the figures, sometimes you kind of lose, you kind of don't get the exact picture of what you're dealing with. You wanted to add something in regards to what Irene just said?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. So you have a situation here where basically it's a lack of trust. Mm-hmm. It's a lack of trust, and at the end of the day, you will have a situation where people in the public sector will be in this confrontation of how much do I earn, you know, and this whole conversation is actually outside the framework of SRC. Mm-hmm. Already, the talks between doctors and the Ministry of Labour and the Ministry of Health have actually exempted SRC in mm-hmm. the sense that the medics have refused whatever the SRC proposal is. Mm-hmm. So the government has to come on the table and sort of like negotiate outside the proposals that SRC has made.
Mm-hmm. You know, the interesting thing is, I remember there was, I can't remember whether it was the doctors or the teachers that had gone on strike, and one of the conditions was, we don't want to see the SRC in the room.
Yes.
But the SRC is ideally supposed to act like some sort of a human resource kind of thing.
Advisory.
Yeah. Who has the job evaluation, has done the human resource calculations and stuff like that. But now when you kick them out, and sometimes you hear Treasury was not involved, the money mm-hmm. person is not involved, you hear Ministry of Labour sent in the wrong person, now you are hearing Moses Kuria saying public service is taking over this whole conversation. I think that's where you are getting mixed signals mm-hmm. over whether government is really keen or is really committed to addressing this whole issue of the job, the public wage bill, but also the thing that Irene mentioned, the constitution limits you to maybe 22 cabinet secretaries, but then we find that you have 15 or something advisors. Mm-hmm. An advisor on media, an advisor on climate change, an advisor on, and unfortunately,
they are CS equivalent.
Yeah, and it almost looks like sometimes they overshadow the CS.
Even increasing the state departments, I think this regime has the highest number of state departments compared to the previous regimes. I mean, it goes to show that they're not really genuine on this topic of reducing the wage bill. Mm.
Unfortunately, this conversation is also cascaded down to the counties. Now, that is the other conversation that SRC does not seem to be interested in following through. Because whenever they are making that whenever they are talking about addressing the wage bill, they are always talking about national government. Mm-hmm. But what about county government? Do they just get a blank check?
Well, ESCC has pointed instances where governors, for instance, have hired more staff than they're required to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have a country where, like, we have you have a complete, total collapse of the system of checks and balances. Because when a governor decides to employ more than they are required to, where is the county public service? Right? Because the county public service is supposed to advise the governor on what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to. But this idea of employing cronies whenever you rise to a leadership position,
mm-hmm.
I think is what essentially would takes us back to this whole conversation of, you know, is our wage bill at an optimum level? Are we spending more than we should? I mean, because most of this staff, have actually been employed outside the, you know, the legal framework, sadly, mm-hmm. where somebody wakes up one day and decides, who makes the decision, for instance, to hire as many workers in a particular department? That should go through, you know, a clear process.
Yeah, be it so, Public Service so Commission, that, Parliamentary
yes,
Service Commission.
So that we're able to justify and say, okay, we are now going to engage 50 more, another 50,000 teachers or whatever the number it is.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, most of these critical sectors are actually also understaffed. So you have critical sectors understaffed, but somehow we are conveniently engaging non-essential staff in the public sector.
Okay, and with that, we just put a pause on that conversation. But next week, maybe we'll look at some of the recommendations that the National Wage Bill Conference has come up with, and how they hope to actually roll out that one in the next financial year, since we are almost technically finishing up this financial year. And we're moving forward and moving on to the next conversation, which is a regional conversation and a topic which Kenya has invested itself to the point that in some areas in Nairobi, they have decided to to crown a capital of a neighboring state, to name it Addis Ababa, in the sense that it is where the former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, if he manages to land the seat of the Africa Union Commission chairperson, he will be domiciled. But last week we had a surprise announcement from Djibouti, who declared that they would like to also front their foreign minister as a candidate in this race, making it a three-horse race, not like the one that was supposedly between Arsenal, Man City, and Liverpool. Okaya, just there's a bit of confusion in the sense that when people heard that the seat is reserved for the Eastern region, for some strange reason, we all believed we just meant the East Africa bloc. Just what does all this mean?
Yeah, so the African Union, for purposes of organization, is divided into five regions, and they're basically geographic regions.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the Central Africa, the Eastern Africa, Northern Africa, Southern Africa, and the Western Africa region.
Mm-hmm.
So the Eastern Africa as a geographical region is not the EAC community as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
The Eastern Africa as a geographical region within the AU actually has 14 member states.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So it goes from where? It starts from Kenya. How far do we go?
I mean, as far as you have Comoros, you have Djibouti, of course, Eritrea, Ethiopia, here nearby, Madagascar, Mauritius, for instance.
Uh-huh.
Those are countries we've not imagined.
Yeah.
So add all those countries now mm-hmm. to the EAC as we know it.
Oh, man. So people were celebrating an early goal, but they really didn't. We haven't really even started the proper count.
Yeah, I think we've barely started, mm-hmm. given the fact that so far within our region, we have only secured two endorsements within the Eastern African region as mm-hmm. a geographic region. We
mm-hmm.
have Uganda and Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, beyond that, we have Angola, Central African Republic, Equatorial Guinea, and Ghana. We've also had countries that have not endorsed us directly,
mm-hmm.
but the candidate, in this case, Kenya or Raila himself,
mm-hmm.
Say that they have secured endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
So these are DRC, South Africa, South Sudan, and Tanzania.
Mm-hmm.
These countries have not formally endorsed us yet, but we are banking on their support given indications that they are likely to support us.
Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest questions that arose last week was, why is Mohamud Ali Soyef, I hope I've gotten that name,
Yusuf.
Yes. Mohamed Ali Yusuf, such a big threat to this race.
I mean, and that's not to say the other two candidates, Somalis Fauzia and our own Raila Odinga, are not. Do not bring a serious profile mm. into this race. But of course, Yusuf has been is a career diplomat, foreign minister for over 20 years. He's versatile, going by the fact that he's able to speak Swahili and English and French, which are quite critical in our in the AU.
Mm-hmm.
So that really presents him as a strong contender in this race.
Mm-hmm. Someone may say Raila Odinga can speak English, Swahili, and German.
but German is not an official language in the AU. I think we have Arabic, French, and English.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but again, so the conversation really is how much support we are likely to get, because we already have an agreement within in foreign ministers from the continent gathered in Addis and agreed that this is East Africa's turn.
Mm-hmm.
So going forward, I think the question is how many endorsements are we going to get by February next year when we are going to have this contest play out?
How many do you need so that you can at least say that I've got this in the bag?
You don't necessarily need an endorsement because this is actually you need a two-thirds majority to win a seat.
Mm-hmm.
But what endorsements do is they give your candidature some momentum, you know, ahead of the race, so that when you're coming into a race with an endorsement of, say, 10 countries in your bloc, mm-hmm. you could easily say then you have an upper hand. So they are purely for purposes of, it's for campaign purposes, really.
Yeah. This is Irene's favorite topic. Yusuf is only 58 years old, while we all know, because Baba's age has been put out there all the time. Does it seem like it's dampening the candidature of Honorable Raila Odinga, Irene?
Age is just but a number. You've really, really ambushed me on that one. But I don't think age will play really a big factor on this particular issue, to the extent of saying that Baba should take a rest even in the, on this particular diplomatic post.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it will play out to edge him out. I think it's all about how, as a nation, we play diplomacy. Because from where I'm sitting and the way what Wakaya has said, given that so far we have received only two endorsements from two countries,
mm-hmm.
and Djibouti
within our region,
the East African region, and Djibouti has been a culprit in somewhat interfering with our bids. I don't know if there's a point they want to put out there, because in 2017 when the former sports cabinet secretary Amina Mohamed was vying, they are also vying for the deputy post, and there are also claims of betrayal when there were notions that they did not vote for Kenya. Of course, they said they did vote for Kenya, but when you look at it, when you look at those votes, you'll realize that Djibouti really played a bad one for us on those particular elections.
Yeah.
And in this particular post, it seems like it is time for Kenya, but they will obviously come out and say we will have our own candidate. But I think maybe as a country, we should ensure that we lock the East African community, that is Somalia, Uganda, Rwanda, which other country? Burundi.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're about
South Sudan.
Although Sudan will not.
By the way, what happens when we are making this count? Africa should have 52 states, if I'm not wrong.
55. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, that tells you my geography is way off. Okay.
No, that went up after Morocco's readmission.
Yeah.
Remember, Morocco was out.
Okay.
Then they came back.
So what happens to states that had coups and stuff like that? Were their membership suspended?
Yeah. So I think that's the big conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But unless a member has been suspended,
mm-hmm.
they have a right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
Sudan was suspended, I think.
Yeah, so far you have. But again, these are just a handful of countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think what ultimately will play out is whether we are going to have concessions before the actual race in February. You may be surprised that some of these candidates, Djibouti or Somalia, may decide to pull out in favor of Kenya. Mm-hmm. So such things also play out. But ultimately, you need a two-thirds majority, in order to proceed, actually to back that seat.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you kind of brought to our attention when we were having this conversation in the newsroom some weeks back was this is not a Raila Odinga candidature. It is a Kenya candidature. Just does it mean that at some point Kenya is actually supposed to unveil Raila Odinga, and that what is that point?
Yeah, certainly. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs, mm-hmm. traditionally, like even when we had Amina Mohammed go for this seat, mm-hmm. you have a formal campaign, a campaign secretariat funded by the government. Mm-hmm. So it is the government running the campaign because, in essence, it's the government that presents you as its candidate.
Mm-hmm. But this one is a unique one for the government to campaign for the opposition leader. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm hoping they're putting their all on this one because, again, the relationship between the government and opposition can be quite a tense one. So this one, I hope they'll give it their all to campaign for Odinga to back that particular seat.
Okay. I want to say thank you very much to Irene and, of course, to Jeremiah Okaya for bringing the conversation to life. And I hope in this whole 1 hour that we've spent, you've kind of got informed about the AU commission race and also the whole conversation around the wage bill. From myself, Labanon Ambisi, Jeremiah Okaya, and of course, Irene Mwangi, I say good night and thank you for listening.